Okay, let's get started. So hello everyone, welcome to the fifth lecture of the XML course. Today it gets interesting, I hope. This time we are going to discuss about how to turn the XML documents that we have so far and give them an external presentation and display them on a web browser. So far what we have been discussing is the very, very basics of the of XML specification, you know, what it allows us to do. So you can define your own languages. So remember that XML is only a meta language, so it only gives you the kind of a guidance and building blocks for you to describe your own language, for example, in your own company, for a particular industry, or wheresoever. So far we have been mainly discussing these well-formedness and validity rules. So, for example, how we can give the grammar to the DTD. And in this lecture, we are going to discuss about how we can extend XML with various languages. And we use XSL just as a kind of an example. So remember that this, what we are discussing from now in this lecture and the lecture afterwards, these aren't part of the XML specification. So these are things that kind of are built on top of XML to allow you to do things. I mean, because if you think about what we have done so far, having just a kind of a XML document and a grammar around it is not too exciting, and it doesn't allow you to do many things. But now as we're entering also the fourth assignment of the demos, that is when we are applying XML documents and the information we have in some way. And in this case, when we thought about what the fourth demo would be like, we decided to have it on these two separate issues about it. Firstly, to, you know, how to just give us some small clues how this information that we have, for example, about the cities, regions, or about the some CDs or artists, how we can display that information nicely on a browser. Okay, nicely is not the right word because we are doing something very, very basic, so more or less doing some tables or putting something like lists on your web browser. But from that you get an idea how you can transform the content of XML documents by the help of XSL to your web browser. So this is more or less just the one example how you can use XSL as a kind of a language to allow you to just manipulate XML documents. This is only one example, one possibility, but I hope this kind of gives you some kind of idea how the XML documents might be also turned to something completely different. For example, to something if you need to present something in your company, let's say in a spreadsheet on Excel that you have to compile from documents certain information and present it to your what kind of a advisory board or managers whatsoever. You can do this by transformations, like through this, what XSL kind of gives you the possibilities with. And in this lecture, I think we have time to discuss shortly about namespaces. And namespaces are just a way to allow you to specify which element names and attribute names belong to a particular namespace to avoid some name collisions. Because when we are getting more advanced cases where we are using XML, it's very often that you actually have elements that are identical from the same name. Let's say a table in HTML might actually mean how you present a table on a web browser, but you know it might also describe something like that in your own XML language. So namespaces allows us to specify which of the element and attribute names belong to a particular namespace. And this is always when you're using XML, in more or less in any circumstance, the namespaces become relevant. So I'm just going to do a very brief part on that one. The next lecture we're going to talk about the physical structure of XML, so how we can declare bigger chunks of text as something that we call entities and use them across documents and within documents and reference to them. So that's also one part that we aren't going to tackle too much in the assignments, but it's part of this physical structure is also part of the very core of XML. That's why we want to give you a kind of a heads up So if you see sometimes some certain references whatsoever made on your document later on in wherever you might be working, you might then like understand that, okay, this is actually now related to physical structure of XML and it can be used in this and that way. But we won't spend too much time on that one, and we didn't want to specify a particular assignment for that. We thought it's more interesting for you to try out how we can turn XML data, that the content that we have, to a browser in a simple way using XSL and XSLT, Extensible Style Sheet Language Transformations, which is a kind of a programming language for XML. And don't worry, we don't really go too much into programming or anything, but just a couple of things that you might use to kind of extract information from your document and just put it to a browser. And just because next week there won't be any assignments, there will be a week off. Not week off, because there's a visiting lecture on Thursday, and Ville Seppänen is going to talk about what also relates to the second part of the assignments, of the fourth assignment, which is more or less how to exchange information between different systems and services by the help of XML. And that's the second part of the fourth assignment, and we wanted to allow you some extra time to do this if you want to get the extra points from the assignments, because there's a bit, we are stepping a bit out of the comfort zone, out of the basics of XML, something else. So we wanted to dedicate some more time to that one. Has anyone already started with the fourth assignment? Are you aware of what the fourth assignment is? Have you checked it on the guidelines? Okay, and one more question, like, how many of you have done already the third assignment, the assignment for this week? Okay, so more or less one third or closer to half. It's good to know because, I mean, it also relates to some of the content we are going to discuss in this lecture. But this we went on before. So XML itself doesn't really give any hints on how the information that you have in your document should be presented, and we need other means to do that. And generally, you might be very well accustomed, or at least know when you're browsing that you see this HTML, the hypertext markup language, you see this HTML standing in quite many places, and this is just a language that allows you to present information online. And there's something that's called CSS, so cascading style sheets, that is used along this HTML language to describe how the font should be like, if you have tables, how the borders or something should be visualized. So this is actually what we are going to apply in this fourth assignment as well. We are going to step a bit more towards the web development environment and look at HTML and CSS, which are kind of some of the basics for doing websites. How many of you have already done something with HTML before? Okay, very, very good. So as you will see, whatever we do in through this XSL very much is aligned with what you do with HTML. So if you have done something before, it's a big advantage for you in the assignment. But at the same time, I think we can point out quite good pointers, hints, how you can get through the assignment even without having any prior knowledge on this. And I really think that looking at some of the basics about HTML and CSS is very, very helpful for you also in the future, no matter if you wouldn't be doing anything with this, but just the style of thinking and the format and the structures that you have. I mean, these come across in many, many situations, and I think it's some type of a competence that you will need sometime later as well. But anyways, we are going to look at the XML with an external representation in this lecture. And there are various ways for doing that. Different developers prefer different solutions, different practices, more or less wherever they are coming from. I mean, if you are in a company working for a company that has long traditions in doing things, more or less you might be somehow tied to the practices that they already have in place, and you have to kind of adjust your own skills to work in that environment. But sometimes you might be in a situation for your hobby or whatsoever band you might have, if you're creating some website or any kind of blogs whatsoever, you might come to cross this situation where you have to kind of make some decisions about this, and whether you are using something like XML to store your content or information. But HTML5 is one of the best options for sure, because it is responsive for different devices. So if you are using your mobile phones or your Mac or whatsoever, it kind of adjusts to the device you are using. So it always looks nice in your device. But this time we are going to step back from HTML5 to the very early, so the very basics of HTML. And I think that gives you a kind of a good hint also how to extend from that if you want to go further. But we last year got some comments about HTML5 and if there's any way to include something like that in this lecture, but we thought that it might be a bit too much, that we want to limit it to the very basics. And now we come to the XSL, which we have briefly discussed on the second lecture. But the basic thing is that you have an XML document and you want to transform its contents to different types of devices, or for, let's say, for further XML documents. You just want to extract some particular information from your document, let's say from your database, and present it somewhere. This XSL, and more specifically this XSLT that we are going to discuss about, allows you to do this, to extract some information and do pretty cool stuff with your documents. XSL, it relates to the term is extensible style sheet language. And just to be clear, and as I said before, this is not part of XML specification. So if you remember, what goes to the XML specification is this well-formedness and validity rules. So remember the properly nested documents, elements, and the starting and end tag, they are in the right place. And if the document is valid, it has a DTD attached to it, and they correspond. I mean that the document follows the DTD. Then document is valid. And also the logical and physical structure that are discussed in the specification, those belong to the XML specification. And what we are now discussing, we're stepping a bit above it or ahead it and discussing XSL. It mainly consists of something like that is called XSL transformations, and that's the language that we use for transforming XML to something else. And that some people call it the programming language for XML. And again, I don't want to scare you, because we are only looking at a couple of elements from these transformations that we are going to apply in quite of a simple manner in this lecture and in the assignment that you are going to have. Something like XML path, XPath, which is also another language, and you will see this. You will see this if you are becoming a web developer or if you are looking at XML any further. There are lots and lots of languages that are derived from the basic XML, like recommendation, for various purposes. And they might be used in different, let's say, contexts in very different ways. But what XPath allows you to do is just it can access and refer to parts of XML documents. It's just a way to navigate in our documents. I'll just tell something basics about that, but you don't need to remember some of those two, in very much detail. What is also part of XSL is this XSLFO, which gives the external presentation to your document. But since 2013, this CSS, so the cascading style sheets, that is also used for HTML, for very basic websites, is also proposed as an XSLFO replacement. So actually, we aren't looking at this XSLFO at all, and we are just going to look at this cascading style sheets and some of the basics for HTML that allow you to do the same stuff. Let's just say like that. And if you ever really looked at, has anyone actually ever opened the the XML recommendation. Has anyone ever looked at it, what it actually is or how it looks like? One. It's okay, it's not too exciting. I mean, it's just text on a screen, but I mean, and I don't want to bore you with standardization, because we would like to keep this rather, okay, I'm not online. But remember that all of these languages that are, let's say, this World Wide Web consortium is putting through, these are work of years and years of development. Sometimes actually some of the basics about, let's say, presenting like HTML or something else might be an output of research from decades ago, something that Russians might have done in the 40s or some guy is doing right now. It might be that it becomes a standard that revolutionizes the world in, let's say, 20 or 30 years from now. The standardization communities and everything like this, it's very, very, let's say, slowly moving things. But if we look at the XSL transformations, the recommendations are usually something like this. They're just like mainly for the community to kind of report what they have done, so that if there are different versions of a recommendation such as XML, this is the XSLT, it's just to provide information about what's the latest version, the previous versions. But what actually happens is that a group of experts from different domains, they sit together on a table, they travel, let's say, to a fancy place in Europe, they sit down and maybe have a couple of beers and debate something about what should go into some kind of a recommendation, what should go into a standard. So, okay, that's maybe a bit nasty way of saying it, but the main thing is that people come together, they discuss, group of experts, what should go into it, and they finally write up some clear rules around it. And the XML specification is very similar, so it just says what it's part of it, explains something where it should be used, what it's good for, and just gives few rules. And what we have in the slide sets, many cases, just reflects what's in the specification. So nothing more on that at this point, unless you're very interested in hearing about the world of standardization. Okay, and the main part of this extensible stylesheet language is this transformations part. And it's mainly just a language for transforming the XML document into some other format. And it just stands for XSL transformations. And sometimes you might see this quite used like as synonyms, this XSL, XSLT. But just remember that the XSLT is the core issue. It's just to like for us to transform the content. And it could be seen as a programming language. And the main thing is that, well, actually, it's said there that with XSLT, you don't need to be bound necessarily to all the content that you have in your XML documents. You can more or less do whatsoever with that. You might, as in the assignment as well, we are just looking at some particular information and we are presenting that. And that's also some of the, let's say, in some might debate that it's the beauty of using something like XSLT, because the people who might be working with content management or like documenting some information, they don't need to be the same people who develop fancy-looking websites or something. They might be different people that handle, let's say, the style sheets whatsoever, and the ones who are focusing, let's say, more on the content side, they can stay there. So you don't necessarily need to have always one person who handles everything. So you can divide similar way as in we have the grammar, like the DTD, separated from XML document. So you can see it the same way as well, that we have the XSL files, which is kind of at provides you the mechanism for transformation and the style sheet as a separate document from the XML document. So that's usually pretty nice. And whenever you are browsing online, let's say using all kinds of websites or online games, you might, and from document management to enterprise integrations, XSLT is applied in various ways. And and there are various examples. So most likely, if you are browsing a lot online, doing different some of these things, let's say browsing portals, blogs, social networking sites, using games, using messengers, things like this, you are also calendars and so on. You are some way using applying XML, XSLT. Okay, yeah, and one good example is that if you have a database, for example, in your company, that you can do a kind of a query and take out a particular information and transform it somewhere. And if you remember these discussions about the tree, how the XML document or the element structure forms a tree, we can think on the same way that if we transform the document, we also modify the whatsoever the result is, the tree. And before we go to the examples, like this XPath, you don't need to know more, but it's just a way to navigate in your tree structure of your document. And this XSLT uses this particular language to find information in XML documents. Okay. And as the focus on this lecture course is on transforming XML document to HTML, displaying information on web browser, we are stepping to HTML and CSS. And I really support or suggest to go to use these World Wide Web schools pages if you aren't familiar with HTML or CSS. And I guess quite many of you said that you aren't familiar with HTML basics. So World Wide Web schools, as I said also sometime earlier, that this is not the same institution who has provided the XML recommendations. So you sometimes might see some information here that is actually not true or not aligned with the real standardization body behind it. But they have a very, very cool examples where you can just modify the content on the spot. But let's just say that in your assignments, if anyone has checked in Optima, you can find the template for the assignment 4. And I have actually downloaded it already. Let's see. There it is. I open it just here. It's something like this. We go in a bit to discuss whatever these template match whatsoever means. But the main thing is that when we have something like this, we declare it as HTML, and the body element just states that everything that belongs to your what is shown in the browser goes between these tags. But this is a good starting point to have this for your just download it and start building on this. And if you might have a laptop, you might want to do something already on the fly. And let's just quickly look at some of the examples of the HTML. So the main thing with HTML, as you might remember from a couple of lectures back, is that if we have, let's say, if we would here have a element called table. In XML, this doesn't mean anything. It's just a name. But when we put it inside these brackets in our XSL file between this HTML body, we are actually now playing by the rules of HTML. We aren't anymore playing by the rules of XML alone. So if we call it table, it's now a table in HTML language. So then it defines actually a table that you would be presenting online. Let's just see if they have it here. HTML tables. So it would be something like that to define that there will be a table in this way. So remember, whenever we put something in brackets and we say that it's HTML, we are actually leaving XML. Now we aren't just describing what the elements are, but we are also saying how they should be processed, how they should be displayed. And some information for you also, if you are looking at the assignments, this might be of interest to you, or at least provide you a good starting point. So whenever you are presenting information on a table in HTML, the first thing is to declare a table element that you also close. TR is equals to row. So whenever you start a row and you close it, that means that there's a row, and in this case there would be two rows, TR that closes and TR that closes. We have two rows, and TD equals as a column. So you could extend it as far as you would like, but actually this is not... Yeah, okay, we have three rows here. Yeah, so in here, here, and here. And you can extend it as far as you can. But this is the very basics, but with XSL, let's just say that we are interested in retrieving some information from our XML documents. If we have 1,000 CDs, like 1,000 CDs with related information about the artist, about the year when it was, and maybe some record label whatsoever behind, and we would like to present that on a web browser. Of course, one option would be that you would manually put these, all of these rows and fill the information like one by one. But with the help of XSL, we can just create some very, very easy loop that we are actually saying that for each row, extract this information. And for each column, extract this information. And we can also say how it should be sorted and so on. So this is the what we are also looking at during this lecture. But if I would have to point out from this HTML page what you should be looking at, I think the most important is the for these tables, for sure. Let's just see. Something like headers, basics. Okay, there's the basics. The headings are anyways, so there are something like three levels of headings, but you can also add information without one, but it's just to provide some information about how it should be presented. So something like headings, the tables, lists, you can also find those from there. So look this up. This will help you in the assignment. You don't have to get too creative in your fourth assignment there. With CSS, you can just say something about how it should be formatted, something about the color, and so on. Let's just say in the example, you don't need to pay too much attention to it, but you should know when you come across some information about the font sizes, about the table borders, whatsoever. It's just that you understand how the logic behind that is. But let's go to XSL in a bit. So this assignment template in Optima, remember when we declare here HTML and put the body, we aren't playing anymore by the rules of XML. We are playing by the rules of HTML. So whatever you write inside this body will be presented on a web browser. Okay, so just to clarify still a bit the differentiation, how all of these help you to extract information from XML documents and present it online. So XSLT helps you to retrieve particular information, so you kind of select which elements and how they should be processed. And also if you have to set some conditions, loops, and so on. HTML helps you to specify what will be presented and how it should be presented, like if it's tables, graphics, and so on. CSS just includes some properties about the visual appearance when we have a human reader. So this is kind of just the separation of these three things. And just to say that in XSL, many things are still living quite much. So you will see, not during this course, you don't see it, but let's say if you are using it over time, things are being developed all the time, so there are quite many changes to the standard itself or how it's been applied. The style sheets for your XML documents, they can be internal or externals, and sometimes they might be also defined somewhere else, but that's also beyond this lecture. And then about the some words for CSS. If we look here at the example, let's not yet go to the some lines in here about XSL, but if we look at the table, when we have something like for element table, we have attribute border, or for the row, we have bg color. These attributes come from CSS, and that you just specify in the brackets, the value is actually then the color you would use. And you can use these color codes. You can even like Google what the equivalent is, but if you have something like Photoshop or Paint Pro whatsoever, you can also see the color codes when you are browsing through them. And you can specify them and then point them in. Okay, then let's go to the XSLT part, how to use it. There are a few key issues here. Firstly, in XSL, we are still tied to only one input file, so that we are taking something from a particular XML file, but we can have multiple output files. If we are, for example, taking what you have done in your assignments, we would do multiple types of outputs for presenting something on a PDF, something on, let's say, another XML file, and so on. This is what we can do. Firstly, the root element that declares the XSL document needs to be always standardized. So all of that will be there by default. You don't have to worry too much about it. And they have a recommendation what you should have there. And actually what you see here is what we're going to discuss briefly in the end of the lecture relating to the namespaces. So you will see this XML NS abbreviation quite many times wherever you are browsing. And that just defines what the namespace is. And in this case, it's the XSL namespace, and it just gives an address, the URI for it. And also something like here you see behind the dots, you see XSL, which is kind of somehow the prefix, so that we can later on in our document, if we need to specify where a particular name comes, we can just use this prefix to say that, okay, now bring me an element, or this element name belongs to this particular namespace. But let's go that a bit later. Firstly, this is what you will see in the documents in many cases, is something like XSL template element, and it just tells which node you are selecting from your document, so which element. So if we are starting, let's say, with our root element, we can just use the very standardized way of declaring it. So we just have the template match, and then we have a slash symbol. Then it just says that let's start from the root element. Whatever I'm doing now in this XSL file, I'm starting from the root and then extracting something, some child element, some information from the document. So this is a way kind of to get started, let's just say like this. It's also something like a standardized way. We can specify here if we have the, from XSL namespace, we have an element called template. This is an element where we have an attribute called match. And this match is also, it just tells where we are looking at. We can specify the element name, for example, tutorials, or if we are just taking something from the entire document and we just want to say that start from the root node, we can use the what you see down here, XSL template match. And this is how we get started. That's the first thing, but you don't have to remember all of this by heart. We'll come to those in a bit. XSL value of element, this is a very important one because we can use this to extract the value of an element to our output file. If we are interested in to extract something about the, let's say, from if we have a catalog of CDs, we want to extract a particular artist that have been releasing albums in 99 or something, we can use the XSL value of to extract those artist names. And it uses the kind of a same structure. So again, this value of element belongs to XSL namespace, just to avoid any name collisions if we have something else in our document where there would be, for some reason, similar named element. The attribute select is also standard. You don't have to remember this by heart. And then we specify what we are extracting. So there's a small example below. There's some inventory consisting of different types of drinks, and there seems to be something like lemonade. So if we would like to reach drink element, we can use this XPath expression inventory slash drink. So we always have to think about that we, from here, from the down. So if we use the XSL template match, it means that we start browsing in our document from the root element, which is inventory. And by specifying from where we want to extract, now we are just browsing in the tree structure. And this XPath language, what I mentioned earlier, it allows us to do this. So if we use this inventory drink, then we are navigating to the drink element, and then we can extract something from it. And in case you need this, I mean, depending on your assignments, on your XML documents, you sometimes need to also extract attribute values, depending on your documents. Use this structure. It's not in the Schools for World Wide Web Consortium doesn't have this example, but if you browse it, you can easily find it as well. But if you just include the et sign afterwards, the element name, inventory, and then some, if there would be, let's say, from lemonade, we would also have inventory drink lemonade slash attribute supplier. Is that understandable? Did you get it? How the logic for browsing in the documents works?
Chinese.
Is it Chinese? So if we want to reach the lemonade element, how would you write it in the brackets now? XSL value of select, and then what would we write there if we want to reach the lemonade? So we start with the same one. So we start from the root. First we have inventory, then we have slash. Okay, then we are going further, then we have drink, then we have slash, and then we write lemonade. Then we have reached the element that we want to do something with. This is just to declare where we want to extract information. We aren't at this point interesting anything further. We are just saying where we should browse to in the document to get something. And in this case, if we would like to get the value mother from there, there's the lemonade supplier attribute, we would have to use in the below case, if we would like to extract the attribute value for some reason, mother, we would just have inventory slash drink slash lemonade slash et sign, and then supplier. Does that make sense? Or is this still confusing? Because I will come to examples also later on in this lecture, but at this point, is it something that, do you understand the logic how we navigate in the document? Because this is something that you need to do in your fourth assignment as well. Yeah, yes. Inventory, drink, lemonade, price, and then we are extracting the value of that one. So there are only few commands in XSL that are of interest or that for us, maybe four of them. This is the second one. The first one is that if we have in our XSL document the template, it just tells, okay, we have a starting point, the root element. And then wherever we need to browse, we can use this XSL value and then giving the kind of the path, how we get to it in this kind of ways. The first one, if we want to extract an element name, the latter, if we want to extract a particular attribute belonging to that element. The third one, this is something that when I said, if you have a very, very long table that you want to automatically extract information from it, we can create a kind of a loop and extract every single case that has these conditions will become kind of a presented in a, if there are thousands of, let's say, albums whatsoever, we can create, like, specify one loop, and then it will do this every single time. And there's something in XSLT, there's this for each element that can be used to select every XML element of specified node set. So again, I'll come very soon to this example. You might need this, you might not. Depending, I think for the advanced or the where you get extra points, I think there you might require something like this. Another is sorting, let's say, based on like the alphabet whatsoever or the name of authors in like descending or like order or something like this. XSL sort allows you to, for example, if you want to list everything when that has been published in 1999 or something, you can by specifying that sort by this. And in this case, it just say like sorted based on author. So if you have a long list of things, if you specify that if order based on author, that's exactly what will happen. So these four are the, I think, the only XSLT commands you will need. This is as much programming we are doing in this course. Do these look scary at this point, or how many of you think that these are rather clear at this point? Few. How many think that it's complete gibberish at this point? Quite. Okay, something like we have a midpoint still, like, clearly, that we need to specify some more, spend some time more with this one. I think what's pretty nice about this World Wide Web Consortium schools, like this, these pages, is that you can use the editor like directly here. And we can play around a bit with this one here. So this is actually exactly what I was talking about. What you see below is just what you would get on a web browser. If we have an XML document here on the left, which is an own document, we have another document that defines which is the XSL file that describes how it should be presented. Remember that these are usually two different documents that we just relate to each other. But we are using here in this example all of the examples that I was talking about. So if we look at the left, the basic things, so we have a very simple XML document that includes information about some artists, their, well, yeah, albums, or is it actually album? Title. Yeah, it's albums, the record label behind it, the price, the year it was published. So if we think on this kind of a case, we could in different cases want to just extract particular information, like if a user would say that, give me, like, let's take it from a user point of view. If you just want to browse, let's say, online and give me all, like, CDs that have been published that year, we can very easily extract the information. When the user clicks, let's say, search, we can very easily, from this document, extract the information with XSLT. And how it happens is here on the right side. And we have here the first expression. Okay, these are the standard ones. Remember, you don't have to remember these by heart. It's just to specify that there's a namespace. And we are taking names from this particular namespace, that is XSL, and we are using this prefix here to point out to the element names like template from that particular namespace. And then we have means to specify the starting point. The template match was the kind of just the very start where we define, okay, if we want to start from the catalog element, we want to start from scratch, we use this slash symbol, which just says that now let's start from the root element. Nothing more. We start. That's our starting point. And what you see here then is the HTML and the body elements. The body belongs to HTML, and it just tells that, okay, now here comes the content, what is displayed on the browser. So remember, now we are playing by the rules of HTML. So if I'm writing here just like great weather whatsoever, I should get it also in my output file, as you see there on the top. So now we are playing by the rules of HTML. Now we are, whatever goes in here is specific, will be presented on the document. And now H2, table, all of these elements have a meaning. They come now from the HTML, like a specification, unless we specify something else. Like here we say that XSL and the double dots, which just say that, okay, now we have an element coming from this XSL namespace. Let's see if I have a annotated version in here. I'm not sure if you can read this. I'm not sure if I can get this any. Is it understandable in the back? But I can also guide you through it. So the main thing is that when we have this XSL template match, we are just selecting all elements starting from that root node. You don't have to remember anything else about this. I mean, I think all of the examples that or the assignments that you have, I think you can use something similar. So you just start from the root. And now we go and play by the rules of HTML when we have the HTML and the body elements that are very standard. When we say my CD collection, we aren't at this point retrieving anything from our XML document. We are just putting some content to this web page that we have. Whenever we are extracting something from the XML document, we have to specify how we do that. And in here you have that. You have for each following element or something, we always have we navigate to the right place, and then we extract the value. So actually the only things that we are here touching the XML documents is through these XSL commands. All of the other things is just content that we write on a web page. So in here, what you have just a kind of a header, my CD collection, as you saw here. Nothing more. And then we define a table, but then for the table, we must find somehow. Oh. Please don't open these. Now it gets jammed. So firstly, we define a table, and we set some borders for the table. And these are some of the basic examples that you can quite easily get from the World Wide Web schools. You don't have to pay too much attention to those. But of course, if you want to find particular colors whatsoever for your tables, you can do that very easily. This is actually something new that wasn't in the previous example. So when we define that we have a table, and we also have here the end for the table, the end tag, when we define the first row, we define under the first tr element how many columns we will have in our document, in the output document. And in this case, we only have title and artist. And these aren't, as you might remember from a couple of slides back, we had this TD. TD is an element that specifies just a column. But if we have TH, it's actually a column header. So it's different in this way. So if you have here a title with the that's bolded, and the background color was actually there specified as well. But it just is a header for a table, and the others are just normal columns. Okay, first we define that there are two columns in this one. We have defined for that row a particular background color using CSS. So those are some very, very basics that you can find from there. We have the header, column headers, and then we end the row. And at this point, we are actually giving information how what we should extract from our XML document. And this is the second one, which might have been slightly confusing. So how do we navigate in the XML tree structure? Firstly, we want to somehow create a loop in our document. We want to say that, okay, let's have this again. We have this one. We navigate in the same way where we want to define the loop. It's the same idea as we had here. So that first we start from the root and then the specify the child element names. Okay, this is what we want to do, this looping. Yeah, so what you see here that the first row has ended. Before they start the next row, they specify what comes afterwards. So this is where the programming is comes to place. So in the document, we start with the catalog, with the root element, and we are browsing to CDs. And we are doing some loop inside the CD element. And the CD was here. So we start from catalog, we browse to CD, and then we are doing some looping where we might do some information with these. That's as much as we know at this point. Browsing to CD. Okay, then what's also done in this example document is that we are sorting all of those instances of the CDs by artist. So whatever the artist name is, they should be it should be somehow sorted by those. Sort enables us to put the values in an alphabetic order, and now it's sorted by the artist name, not the title of the album. So what we do here is that we have navigated to the CD. Is that clear so far? We have the catalog, the element, the root element, then we have the child element CD, and then we are now here. We can manipulate this information at this point. And we have access directly to this artist element by that. Is that clear to you at this point? We don't have to specify again the same order, the same navigation structure, because we have already included in here. Is that rather sense-making? We have already browsed to the CD, and now we want to do something, some sorting with the artist names. We want to sort by the artist. Is that rather clear? If we have already specified how we are, where we are navigating to, we don't have to do it here again. Okay, what we are now doing, or what they have been doing actually in this example, is that they have closed down the first row where they had the header columns, then they specified the loop, give me all the, do some looping under the CD based on artist name. And then they start a new row, and they specify the two columns, because there was two columns, title and artist, and now comes the extracting part. They aren't extracting information from a particular attribute, they are extracting information, the values of those elements, title and artist. So they are, for every single case when they are looping, they want to access every single CD element and always extract the title and the artist, nothing more. And again, what you see here, you don't see something like catalog, CD, and title. But you don't have to navigate here anymore. You have already, for the looping part, navigated there. You are already under the CD, so you can just specify what value you now extract. And
so,
it's sorting by the artist name, and in this case, as you can see, it's let's see if it's different here. It's Bob Dylan, Bonnie Tyler, Dolly Parton, whatsoever. So is it the same here? Okay, actually, it was already in that order, but it's just ordering based on the artist names, and I think it's alphabetic. That's actually true. It's exactly the same. Yeah, that's a good point. Sort the output. Do we have a different? No, we have the same one. Does somebody want to do a quick Googling? XSL sort. Is it alphabetical? It always gets to the same. The World Wide Web schools they are very, very popular nowadays. So more or less, when you Google anything about XML or XSLT, it always gets you to more or less the same place. But Googling is always a good thing to try out. So if you have a particular question, just try it. I'm trying to figure out how to start the XML list of employees alphabetically by last name using XSL. Let's see what they have. At a glance, sort, select, order, ascending should be. Okay, they are using something a bit more advanced here, because as you can see, when we have only this one. We have the sort and then we have select, but you can also actually specify give some more attributes that give information if it should be ascending, descending, or so. So what you have in that case is, I think it's just in the order of appearance. And if you would like to specify something else, you have to use an additional attribute for the sort to say something about the order. But I strongly recommend this. If you have for your assignments a particular like problem, there's usually a lot of people discussing the same issue. Okay, so that's the order of appearance. And as you can see here, we have only specified one row because we have set the loop already before this row starts. We don't have to specify now lots and lots of rows because even though the output should be like 100 or something of like titles and artists appearing in the table, we only have to specify it once because we have the loop and it just says it that extract these values, title and artist, as many times there is something to extract from. And every single time they extract it, they create a new row. And the according columns where these title and artist will be appearing. But what is also very important is that we close every single one, because when we have now when we have specified that there's a table and then there's these column headers title and artist, we have also opened the loop, so we have to close it. If we close it, if we forget to close it, it actually shouldn't work anymore at all. So this is the same kind of well-formedness rules that XML languages always have, so that there has to be a beginning and an end tag, and they have to be properly nested. So it goes for XSL as well, which is derived from XML language. It's closed directly, as you can see. Yeah, because for this for each the loop, there's no like closing symbol. But as you can see, the sort is it gives the slash symbol directly, so it doesn't have to. It closes automatically, immediately. It just tells that for this loop that we are creating, just sort this by artist and based on the appearance. Is this logic behind this example? Is it clear to you? How many think that it's understandable at this point? Okay, so we're something like halfway there. But remember that the when you are doing the assignment, like I hope that you are everyone having maybe one or two support persons to do those with, but try to figure out those like tricky parts yourself, because I mean, it's very likely that when you are explaining something, some information gets a bit ambiguous. But when you are doing something hands-on, and just doing few of these examples in the World Wide Web schools, I think you should get the hang of it. But let's see if we have some more examples that we can help you with. Well, actually, we don't have there. Let's see if we have something from these ones. Is it always the same? Yeah, they always use the same example here. But when you start your assignments, remember that you don't have to use anything else but the template, which specifies the root element, where you start your starting point, the way for extracting a value, an element or attribute name, so this XSL value of element, the for each, the looping one, I think it was only for the additional or like that you get some extra points from, and then the sorting that just sorts the output in some way. You don't have to touch any of these other conditions that go more towards programming. But maybe does someone have a particular question about like some of these elements in XSLT that are a bit ambiguous, not understandable? Was it the looping part, or is it the general logic of like extracting information, or how you are browsing in the document? Maybe you can specify that, so we might want to discuss that a bit further. Do you have something particular in mind, anyone? How we link between the files. Yeah. So remember, in this example that I took from the World Wide Web Consortium schools, it doesn't have a DTD file attached to it. It's a plain XML file. And there's a standardized way of linking between the XSL files. So it's just like this specification that the XML style sheet, the type that is text XSL, this is standard. Again, you don't have to remember it, but href and then this test XSL is the exact pointing out to the XSL document. So this is the one that makes the links between these. And because we haven't specified a big like a name, like a long URL or anything, it just gives us the information that we can find it in the same folder where this XML document is. So we just give the name of the file. If it would be somewhere else, we would have to specify exactly where we can find it. But this is how we link the XSL document. And in the XSL document itself, we don't need to have a pointer back to the XML document, because we might use this XSL document for various XML documents. This might be something like a master XSL document where we can just extract information from all kinds of places. So we don't have to link this back to a particular XML document, as long as we make this link clear from the XML document itself. And in many cases, we might also have here the link to the DTD specified, if we have the grammar rules that the element names, that they come from somewhere and they follow a certain pattern. So that's most likely what would be. So I think we had here the... So if it would be an external DTD, so sorry, is it invoice? So then we would have just something like this, pointing out that there's a DTD. But in this case, we didn't have it. We just have the... pointer to the XSL document where we can find information how it should be presented on a browser, but from the XSL document, we don't have to link it back because we can use it for multiple documents. Is that rather sense-making, how we can link between these? This is standard, so you don't have to remember anything else but in your XML document to include this way of linking it and specify the name of the document. Is that rather clear? But on Thursday, there will be some discussion on the DTD assignment and then something on to prepare you for the fourth assignment for this XSL part and for the SOAP, like the, for the additional points. We can also do it in a way that we get some couple of more examples that we can play around with if people find it helpful. Do you think there's a need to have something on this Thursday after the demo session? Some more on the logic behind this XSLT elements, this sorting and doing loops, extracting value. Do you think so? So maybe someone can raise a hand if that would be needed, then we can prepare for it. Couple of hands. Do you think there's something more needed on the basics of HTML, CSS? Because you don't need too much information in your assignments, but do you think that would be needed? Something how to create tables whatsoever? Any hands? I guess not. So okay, we'll try to prepare some more examples on the logic behind XSL. But the first thing to remember is just that we have only these four things that we somehow need in our XSL documents. The template that specifies the route, then the where we extract values from, and again, in the example, we navigated to the particular element in the loop part, not where we specify the what value should be extracted. So that depends on what you present first. So if you already have navigated somewhere, you don't have to do it again. So XSL value of, you can extract information from elements and attributes depending on what you need. For each was the looping part, if you want to repeat something that you don't manually write, and the sorting if you want to sort the output, for example, on the order of appearance. Okay, the one thing to say is that when you have the documents, if you have an XML document and the according XSL document, you can just drag the XML document to your web browser and it will present it the way it should be presented. This all the major browsers support it, so you don't have to have a particular environment where you test this. So if you have linked your XSL document in the way I just showed you to your XML document, just drag the XML document to your web browser and it shows what you have. If it doesn't show anything, then there's something wrong in your document. So that's the main thing. But all of these browsers support it. So I think I even have. Let's just see. I'll go quickly to the to put this in practice. Yeah, so if you track just the XML document, that works nicely, and let's quickly try with Firefox. Yeah, it's exactly the same. And remember, if you do any kind of changes, well, if you write in the XSL document, if you hear the body starts and you write any gibberish here, it will go to your output document. So whatever you write here will be displayed. And the XSL commands that we had here, they are just means to extract information from the XML document. And you can do all kinds of, you can insert graphics, put links to other pages whatsoever, whatever you want to within this body that you have here. So that's also something like from last year. People were wondering how I can get some something manually put there, some page like paragraph changes or something like that. But you can very easily do that by if you want to specify a paragraph where you write something. HTML has this P element, and then you write something, and then if you would create another paragraph, it's displayed there in the browser. So whatever goes inside the body, you are now playing with the rules of HTML. And from the World Wide Web schools, you can have like this couple of main tags if you need them. I'm not sure if you even need to put anything in, like ordered really on a web page. Maybe something just creating lists or, but that should be rather easy to find. Okay, and regarding the namespaces that you saw there, it's just a way to avoid name collisions, nothing more. And it's just when you need to somehow reuse element and attributes names in different context. Let's just say like HTML is very, very broadly used and like a popular markup language, and you can use the element and attribute names all over again. And this just gives you us a very, very easy way to specify like where we can find this element and attribute names. So it simply is a kind of a XML namespace. It consists of like element and attribute names and the identifier URI, just identifying the set. So this is the URI here, as you can see, the actual location where you can find information about this namespace. And to get access to the XSLT elements, in the documents you saw that we are using this XML NS XSL, and later in the document always XSL value of. We just have to always use this prefix to get kind of a browse into the right, find the right element name. And most likely if you work with XML later in your life, you at that point, it's very unlikely that you will be using this DTD that we are discussing during these lectures, because DTD is rather simplified, and when, let's say, in complicated real life situations, you need ways to put a bit more conditions and specify things, and DTD is not the best way to do that. And XML schema is another language that is created to support this. So we don't really discuss it during this lecture. Next lecture, I'm going to show a couple of examples for you just to be aware of it. But there, things are declared in a slightly different way. But namespaces are even more frequent there. But just the kind of a typical setting where you need namespaces is that we sometimes might have the same like element and attribute names, like or multiple similar element names appearing in our document, meaning different things. So in this one, like BiblioML, so something like a XML language for libraries, has defined element the title and the attribute type as in the following way. And in another XML language, the same attributes might be, the same elements, same attributes might be declared in a different way. And this causes problems if we need to sometimes use both of these in our context. So more or less what I just gave the example that in HTML, table means the actual presentation of the table, but in XML, your own XML document, it might just mean something like a physical table that you're trying to explain to someone. And if we want to make a separation of these, we just say that whenever we are pointing out to the HTML table, we use the prefix and like to the namespace and try to avoid this name collision. And that is done in this way. Firstly, wherever we use namespaces, we can, for example, in our root element, specify multiple namespaces. If our university would have an own namespace where element and attribute names are declared, we would declare it in this way. So this report, if that's the root element, we have this kind of a prefix XML namespace always. I mean this abbreviation, sorry. And then the label of the namespace, and then the unique identifier that identifies and uniquely this namespace. And later, if we want to use it in our document, we just use this yliopisto prefix to point out to it. And namespaces are unique, so if they are just kind of a name, so it, both of these would be different namespaces. So you can more or less give a namespace any name you want to, but in many cases it's an actual link to a particular website where you can find information about that namespace. But if you want to be just like just to avoid some name collision and not putting too much emphasis on the namespace itself, you can just call it with your first name, and that's also a fine namespace name. But again, these would be different ones. But this just shows how we might use how we actually link to that namespace. So we have the XML document, we have the standard declaration, then we have the root element raportti, and we specify a namespace yliopisto. And in whenever we are then taking element names from that particular namespace, we always use this namespace name, this yliopisto, and then the double dots, and then the name of the element. But if we only have one namespace and we declare it in the root, we don't necessarily need to specify always yliopisto, again yliopisto, and so on. But I think this presents the complicated thing behind it, so that sometimes you might need elements from multiple like sources. And in the root element raportti, you can actually declare multiple namespaces, as we have done here. With our own, something like from our own university, and then the standardized HTML like namespace that needs to be declared in the same way. Otherwise, we are somehow screwed, because I mean we need to get those the element and attribute names as they are when we are presenting information on a web browser using HTML. But what we are just doing here is that we are usually taking like element names from the yliopisto namespace, but in some cases we might need to also point out to another namespace, which is in this case this HTML. And again, we use just the name of it, and then what element we should get from their address. And it might be that in the yliopisto namespace, if it would be in English, we might have address element declared as well. And by using this kind of a practice, we are avoiding the collision. And whenever these examples get more complicated, there are more and more likelihood that we have these collisions. So that's just to avoid this very simple procedure to avoid lots of harm, lots of problems. And the main thing why DTD is so like limited is that it was done sometimes, when it was being developed, they didn't really think through of particular cases where they have to also apply namespace in complicated setting. So XML namespaces are not supported nor understood by the DTD. And that's also one of the reasons that like this XML schema that is kind of a more advanced version of a DTD is usually used in practice, but it's much, much more complicated. And it's also not part of, you know, the basic XML specification. The basic specification just gives like that, okay, we have this validity well-formedness rules, you can use this kind of a DTD, but you aren't required. We don't specify the element attribute names. You can specify those however you like in the context where you are. I mean, that's the beauty of XML. It's just so simple that wherever you use it, you can extend it, modify it the way you want to, and you can use different languages from all around for web services whatsoever to do whatever you want to. In this lecture, we have been discussing just presenting something online on a web browser, but in another case, it might be something completely different. And the XML just gives some kind of a standard building blocks for you to use. And XML schema, the developers created something more advanced, and it's now very widely used, and they don't like take anything away from each other. It's just like a different, more complex settings, you need something a bit more complex, and the XML schema supports that pretty nicely. Things that DTD couldn't do. Okay, look, just at the end of the lecture, spend just like 1 second looking at these, would you know some of the answers to these, like, based on what we have been discussing so far. But firstly, why is the namespace important in XSL or in XML in general? Maybe someone can just say a couple of words. Why it's important? Okay, we aren't going to ask something like this in the example, but in the exam, but I mean the most likely thing would be just to say to avoid name collisions. This is good enough. If we have different namespaces that have each element and attribute name specified, we can just avoid, if we use them together, we can avoid them colliding if they are similar attribute and element names. What XSL command is used to select all the elements in XML document? Was this something that you might remember from this lecture? It's the starting point, the XSL template. So that's just to say the starting point. That's where we start navigating. What XSL command sets up the loop? Does someone remember by heart? You don't have to remember this by heart anyways, but and we won't ask this kind of a trivial questions in the exam, but it's just something for refresh your memory at this point. It was the for each. So for each instance, do this, whatever that is. So that just creates a loop that we repeat all over again. So that's more or less as much as programming we'll discuss in this lecture, because XML is not a programming language, but when we use XML in a particle environment and take some other languages, we might have to do some programming around it, but XML itself is not a programming language. That's something to remember. How do you show the content, the C data of an element? For that, we had the XSL, the value of element that we just say that, okay, if we have already set up a loop, no matter if we need such a loop, if we don't manually write every single time, that every single time, like, give me this value of an element, it was this one. And remember that in your document, you have to specify unless for a very complicated case, you have to specify this navigation structure only once. I mean, at least in these examples, I doubt you need to specify it more. So if you are setting a loop before you are extracting any values, you might already specify what we had here. So if we want to get all the information about the value of supplier attribute, we just say in the XPath expression would be that the value of select inventory drink lemonade /@ supplier, and then we would get the value. And you have to specify that kind of a pathway only once, most likely, unless you need to at some point get something from elsewhere in your document, like if you have a more complicated tree structure in your document. And just a kind of a couple of last words, so that even if you don't become a developer, this is also what I think that Joni Kettunen will discuss, is it now 1 week from now or 2 weeks from now? 2 weeks from now, he's going to give the visiting lecture, and he works now at Digia, but in many kinds of environments, contexts, is that there are things that you need to understand in one way or another. So even if you don't become a developer or web designer or whatsoever, the logic behind what goes in XML, but also in HTML, and this XSL, more towards programming, they will become very handy for you in one way or another. And especially if you are managing a lot of people at some point who are doing some development, that is then good to know at least a bit what they are doing and why they have selected to implement particular things in a particular manner. So there need to be some reasons why they have done things, and as a manager you then have to have a, some control around it. So we can have numerous choices if we are developing, you know, something from scratch for our own purposes, but really to remember that if we are working in a particular company that has particular systems in place, particular ways of working, like even change of like people who work with content, some who are more working with, I don't know, from a different unit that they need to touch upon the content some way. All of this has, of course, some boundaries on what you would develop and what you would be using in the end. But this XSL that we have been discussing in this lecture is very, very, it's very powerful way if we think about that we have some database or something in our company, and we need to retrieve particular information from particular documents, and it's and to put that we don't always have to mimic the or reproduce the contents of the documents. We can have just the particular XSL documents that provide mechanisms to always extract information a particular way and present it to the end user, no matter what they are doing, or for your company in the if you are working in content management or something. It's it will become a very handy asset for you, I'm sure. But we'll prepare some more examples for Thursday. I'll discuss that with Toni. And next time we'll discuss more on the physical structure of XML and some XML usage in organizations a bit more. And for some of the readings, browse through the slides because I have some extra slides there that we aren't going to touch upon anymore. So if you want to read something extra, just browse to the end of the slides. So see you all soon. Have a nice evening.
We have only one guest.
Two.
One is this
guy. Next week, Thursday, is the first visiting lecture. It's more about the service and system integration. And then 2 weeks from now, on Tuesday, we have one guy from Digia. So we have two.